This is Sports Content Kings, talking to today's brightest minds in sports and entertainment.
Welcome to Sports Content Kings, brought to you by WSC Sports, a podcast dedicated to today's brightest minds in sports, figuring out the latest trends and technologies shaping the industry. I'm Aviv, one of the founders of WSC Sports and Chief Business Development Officer. Happy to be here together with my brother.
I'm Shaka, I'm VP Business Development at WSC Sports, and we are the Arnon Brothers. And today we are joined by Mark Walker, Head of Business Development and Innovation from ESPN. This has been a great conversation, and we thank Mark for coming and hope you will all enjoy. All right, Aviv, here we have a guest with us, Mark Walker. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This is a real pleasure and great to have the opportunity to finally meet you guys, even if it's remotely. Soon, hopefully, we may have the chance to all be together, so that'd be great. Yeah.
Hopefully. A few years of working with you guys at ESPN, and we're really excited to get to do this chat today, and hopefully if we get the opportunity to have you over here in Israel sometime soon.
Yeah, working with your colleagues and satellites around you, and finally we meet in person. So thanks for joining.
Well, you know, I'm in fact the satellite, so I think these things have happened in the right order. You know, we've enjoyed we're in year two of a three-year relationship with WSC Sports Technology, you know, value relationship tremendously. You know, the trajectory has been outstanding. You know, so I want to express gratitude to you guys for working so closely with us and aligning so well against, you know, our business needs. So, great relationship.
Perfect. It wasn't our question, but we'll take it. It's a great, great segue to start today.
Yeah, amazing feedback. Thanks for the kind words. And, you know, ESPN, the team has been pushing us so hard to do better. So it's been a mutual benefit, you know, making us better and helping you. I think it would be great, Mark, if we can ask you to give a little bit of your background, your professional trajectory, and what brought you here to be, you know, the head of business development at something like ESPN and innovation. So if you can give us your background and we'll take it from there.
My background is pretty straightforward and somewhat complicated and convoluted at the same time. You know, started life as an engineer, continued into graduate school, got really fascinated with the area of law because it was a constraint on everything I was doing. I didn't know anything about it. Nobody in my family is a lawyer. Applied to law school on a whim. I was admitted, and everybody around me told me I had to go. I had no idea law school was an interesting or competitive thing to do. You know, at the time I thought it was some kind of departmental transfer. So like at the urging of literally everyone I knew, other than my father, who stopped talking to me, I went to law school, and, you know, that kind of defined my path after that, which is, you know, really working often at the intersection of law and technology. You know, it's very early to the web and to the internet. You know, it's the guy on the floor, the chairman's floor in a record company who knew how to connect to the internet. And, you know, that gave me this kind of instant status as an expert, right? So that was it was quite remarkable because I didn't know much more than anyone else. I just knew how to get on, right? My career has really been the intersection of technology and entertainment and media. Those are the things I love, and that's really defined my path, whether it's been, you know, record companies during the early days when we were making the transition to digital distribution, you know, straight through to Disney and now at ESPN.
You spent a lot of time at Disney at the parks segment of the company. Is that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the company kind of reformed around me. I mean, not personally, but, you know, I took a role at Disney Interactive, running Disney Interactive Media. We were then merged into the Consumer Products Group. And then the Consumer Products Group, in turn, was rolled up into the Parks and Resorts organization. So while I stayed somewhat in the same chair, the organization changed all around me, and I ended up working at, you know, in the division, which is Parks and Resorts and Consumer Products, before coming to ESPN.
All right. So now bringing that consumer background and knowledge to this world of sports media, and we always say at our company that we're lucky to be in an industry that has no consumers. It has fans. And that's very, very different. So bringing that knowledge into the sports fan space, how did that contribute to what you've been able to bring to the table to bring that background and put it to work with your role currently at Sports Business Development and Innovation?
Yeah, as you know, our objective is to serve sports fans, you know, anytime, anywhere. You and we share very much the same ethic, you know, that is the high respect for fans, for the fan experience, to give them what they want when they want it. You know, we don't swim upstream in that way. We're really always looking for fans to tell us what they want, and it's incumbent on us to just figure out how to do it. Technology often becomes a great path to do that. I think the WSC relationship points that up in the sense that, you know, fans want things that are relevant and they want them exceedingly quickly, that technology allows us to do that. They have a boundless appetite for stuff in social media, you know, which is very different than linear. A linear highlight, maybe you get one or two highlights on SportsCenter, whereas social media platforms or an insatiable consumer of, you know, sports content and sports highlights. And that's aligned very well. You know, it's been a really highly unanticipated benefit of what we've done through automation with WSC, which is now the volume of output matches the desired consumption across social platforms. Really, really hard to do because, as I said, the appetite is insatiable. Right. Yeah. And as much as you put out, there's always a desire for more on those platforms.
There's no end to it. When we started the company over a decade ago, we were going broadcasters. We also we met your counterparts back in the day. And the business was all around linear. And the driver for the revenue was basically how much ratings can we get on TV. Now, that digital side was basically another cost base, something you need to do, another website or app that you have to develop, but it wasn't the main part of the business. Now that's fundamentally transformed over the years, and we've been taking a role. It was riding that wave, right? And taking a role in that fundamental shift. But for your business at ESPN, it's now, I guess it's at the forefront of what's coming, and like the business and the business itself is changing. So I guess leading business development and innovation, it's two sides of the same coin. So how do you see that challenge and that opportunity forming in front of you?
Yeah, well, you said it exactly right. Because oftentimes when I tell people in the head of business development and innovation, you know, they're kind of somewhat confused because they seem to be very different functions. But Aviv, as you said, it's the same function, right? Like good business development is figuring out how to do continuous innovation through working with best-in-class partners and, you know, helping those partners kind of focus and align against your business objectives. And I think that's a very powerful innovation, right? Because, it, you know, as great as we are, you know, we'll never have enough engineers, enough internal entrepreneurs, enough market sensitivity to always figure out what's going on. And we found more and more that that's really best executed, you know, by having key partnerships of folks who are, you know, really aligned against business objectives, aligned against their view of the marketplace and kind of what we're doing, getting very deep with them. You know, as you said, the innovation team pushes you guys and you push us. And I think that's the perfect outcome that exists right at the intersection of business development and innovation. That's how those things should work together.
Maybe take us back. 20 years ago, each of us would see the game on TV, or if we didn't catch it on TV, we would wait maybe to SportsCenter in the evening, or maybe we missed that. We'll wait for the newspaper the next day to read an article about it. That was the expectation. And the paradox is the better the broadcaster has become with technology, the more insatiable the appetite has become as well. So in a way, the better the rights holder has gotten, the gap from the fan maybe, or the chase was still on. You got better, the fans want more. You got better, the fans want more. And that trend keeps on going. Even now when we have that scale was unmatched before and it's something new, still maybe there's still a gap until you get to the event horizon, which would be really one video for one fan, really hyper personalized, you know, as we call VOC, video on command. The fan will have complete command and control on everything that they're seeing, and that is still not here. So now my question to you is, do you really see us going all the way to that one-to-one interaction, really hyper-personalized? Or does that in some way, maybe you don't think it's the way it's going to happen. Maybe you think it puts in some jeopardy the legacy, where everyone is watching TV and seeing the ESPN broadcast, which is where you want people to go. So maybe it was too many directions to ask single questions, but try to take a crack at it.
Look, it's a brilliant question, right? And it's one that I think we're slowly finding the answers to, right? I mean, one of the answers is, it was anticipated that the more there's consumption on social and digital platforms, that would erode consumption on other platforms, right? But we're finding, you know, we have record reach with the social and digital platforms. And at the same time, you know, we're achieving record ratings in linear. And I think one of the things that is being revealed is a consumption really across broad spectrum of activity. You know, there's a thing that's very personal to you that you care most about, but then they're the water cooler moments. But then again, mm-hmm. sports exists in culture, right? Yep. So the things that aren't really necessarily relevant to your sports preferences, you know, that you care about because they have impact in culture, right? And I think that's the spectrum of consumption. And I don't think personalization, for example, extreme personalization supplants any of that. I think it actually enhances it and drives the engagement deeper. We found more and more that live sports are tending to eat everybody else's lunch in entertainment right now, right? And I think it's because of that impact. You know, it's very personal, tied to very personal passions, a very personal focus. But at the same time, you want to talk to other people about it. It exists kind of in a water cooler space. But it also exists in culture broadly. You know, my wife cares about what LeBron wears, even though she doesn't watch basketball, right? Yeah. And I think that it's that, you know, it's really working against that entire spectrum that makes sports so special. And look, I think we're rapidly reaching a place where, you know, not only will you have your kind of personal clip or highlight, you have your personal sports broadcast summary, you know, delivered by an avatar written by AI. I mean, it'd be your thing. And then you think about the power of that. So for example, you know, we have a very popular fantasy product, right? But imagine that, you know, every Monday morning, you kind of get your own mini sports center cast that is a reflection of the picks that you made in fantasy. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's real, really, really cool. Very excited about that potential. I don't think it supplants anything. I think it enhances the entire experience of sports consumption.
I think that was part of my pitch right there. In some cases, I think we're seeing, following up on what you said, we're seeing continuous changes in the trends and the patterns of how fans follow the sports becomes more... you mentioned social, but also the format and the engagement keeps changing. It becomes a vertical feed. You go on just follow your fantasy players. You follow based on your betting choices. Maybe if you play certain bets, what your interest is, your chat current watch party or chat with your friends is, or maybe what kind of NFTs you bought. So like it's all blending together and it's all media, sports, media and entertainment. And all of it is, I'd say, opportunities, but some things that ESPN is definitely with your popular fantasy game, but everything else around it, all the content, you're the destination for all those fans to follow and to find a lot of this content. So how do you look at all these different verticals, I would say, that like I'd say they're all different businesses. There's companies, startups, technologies that are different and evolving at a rapid pace in all these verticals that I just threw out there, but then there's a few more. What's your focus today? How do you see yourself playing in all these fields?
As you said, it all connects to fandom, right? And the nature of fandom has evolved. We go back 30 years, and if you told me you were from Boston, Massachusetts, I could tell you everything sort of about your preference space around sports, you know, the team you rooted for, the athletes you were interested in.
Especially in Boston.
especially in Boston, right? I don't mean to pick on them, but especially in Boston.
Perfect.
And that's no longer true. You know, I have a son who grew up in Los Angeles and went to high school in New York, but he's a massive Milwaukee Bucks fan. You know, I mean, that's something, never been to Milwaukee. You know, that's something that's never happened before. But, you know, Giannis is his idol, right? So that's how that fandom developed. And as you said, I mean, there's a lot of elements that provoke fandom now, right? Across digital collectible space, across fashion. You know, I mean, this, it's just really remarkable the number of ways that folks have to connect into sports and the number of ways that they have to, you know, develop and evolve a fandom, right? Before it was where you're born. You know, I was born in the Washington, D.C. area. I was a Senators fan when I was very young. My heart was broken when they moved to Texas. And, you know, I abandoned baseball at that time. But the, you know, that's how long that fundamental emotional connection hasn't changed, but the method by which folks get there has changed remarkably, expanded remarkably. Yeah.
I think one of the things that you put your finger on there is the fact that it moved, or it got deeper from teams being the main following focus to players. You tell narratives around players now, and players have their own outlets as well. You're talking about a fashion line. Now a player can have a fashion line, right? Has a media outlet, has a media following, and being an influencer themselves, not just the club. I remember the clubs that I was following, again, 20, 25 years ago, I had the players that I liked, but I knew nothing about them. I didn't see anything off court. I didn't know what's going on. And now you can follow them all the time, and engagement drives engagement, right? When you engage them outside of the court, you come also to the court. How do you see ESPN's role in innovation? Do you want to be more of the trailblazer and the trendsetter? Or do you want to put your, ear on the ground, see what works, what the fans want, and then you go, you implement it better, and then lead after the trend is happening? How do you see your role?
I think that, company in ESPN's position could really be satisfied with fast following, right? It's really hard to be relevant in sports media without doing something with ESPN, right? So we could clearly adopt a strategy of fast following. The problem is, if you talk to someone, my colleagues in marketing and brand, they'll tell you that's not what our fans expect, right? They expect us to lead. They expect us to be on the cutting edge. They expect us to define the next thing, the next generation of sports media. And so, we have to observe that obligation. Look, strategically and economically, it'd be better to kind of get in the back seat, see what works, and, then adopt it. But we don't have that luxury with our audience. And I think it also, it really ties to the history of ESPN. ESPN, from the inception, a scrappy 24-hour network that everybody said would never work for sports, based in Bristol, Connecticut. Before we had major sports league rights, all we had was innovation, right? We turned the America's Cup into exciting, fan-engaging events, sailing, right? World Series of Poker went from being, literally watching the paint dry to being this incredibly popular and compelling tournament. And I just think that has been the pattern of ESPN, for more than 40 years now. Someone said something very interesting about us. They said, you guys are Coke, but you act like Pepsi, And I find that to be a compliment, right? We're the market leader, by a significant measure, but we don't act that way ever. And that's not the culture internal whatsoever.
Sense of urgency stays, the hustle.
Absolutely.
That's actually a very interesting characteristic and view to have. I mean, the market leader always has a lot more to lose. But then again, I get your marketing guys that like don't want to be the followers. You wanna set the trend, and it worked for you a few times in the past. As you mentioned, like you created these great, now very popular properties that were evolved on your platform, and now fans come for that. Now I'd say fantasy and other things. You were a big part of pushing that. Now, my question, if you're okay to share, I wanted to ask you about sports betting. With betting being legalized now in the States, state by state, and we saw this happening, we were assuming that media and betting will see a convergence in some in some shape or form, because the US fans will not settle for just like an Excel sheet-like experience where they just see some numbers and place their bets and then later see if they won. It's going to be a much more interactive, video-related, engaging experience, similar to what they're used to on social media. And like, it's basically the betting business reinventing itself. That's what we saw happen when we saw that it trending that way, but it hasn't yet happened. It had like, I don't see we're not at the tipping point yet, and it hasn't evolved to like to converge as much as we thought will happen by now. What do you see your role in that space?
I think there are a number of dimensions, right? And look, ultimately, the way we engage with sports betting is really defined by the expectation of fans, right? And you know, we find over and over again that sports betting is an essential and compelling part of sports media consumption. And it's a place that, you know, our fans not only want, but expect us to be in. And, you know, with that, to your point, I think there's a responsibility. I mean, there is a natural convergence, but, you know, I would say that, you know, there's sort of the implementing tools, which are, you know, oftentimes the betting platforms themselves. And, you know, you kind of look at the need on betting platforms, you know, which is accuracy, efficiency, speed, and ease of use. And those things are somewhat perhaps inconsistent with some of the audience-facing media pieces, right? So while I thought the convergence would kind of be on a platform basis where you kind of go to one place and get everything, I actually think it's really the interaction relationship between two kind of purpose-built platforms, right? So, you know, if you think about, you know, shopping and Shopify, right? There's the contextualization, there's the relationship with the consumer, the audience, and then there's this really robust, you know, back end that empowers all these things. And I think sports bet, now I'm beginning to believe more and more the sports betting is heading in the same direction. You know, there are activities that I would conduct on ESPN or ESPN platforms that I'm just never going to do on my favorite sports betting app, right? Like, I'm never going to build a NCAA tournament bracket on a sports betting app, but I'll do it every time and multiple times on ESPN. But I think the interesting thing becomes, now I've built my bracket, I'm in this free-to-play contest with my friends, but I really like parts of my bracket. And so, you know, how can I make it easier then to convert that bracket into a series of bets or parlays that are really interesting? And that leads to my second point, which is one of the challenges of sports betting is it's existed sort of in dark alleys for a very long time, you know, particularly in the United States. And the lexicon, the methods, you know, all those things are actually designed for people not to understand them broadly and to keep people out. And so one of the opportunities I think ESPN has, and the sports media industry has generally, is, you know, how to make the things that have been historically associated with sports betting, you know, how to bring those things into the bright light and how to make them palatable and compelling to broad number of consumers. I think the state lotteries are probably the best example. You know, a lottery 50 years ago was the numbers game, you know, which was sold out of the back of bodegas, right? You know, in secrecy. And then somehow now we've progressed to the point where soccer mom will pull up in any gas station and buy a lottery ticket. And that transition is an important one. And I think one that's available to sports betting, how to make it accessible, how to make it palatable, how to turn it from sort of this dark wagering industry into something, frankly, that's light and fun.
And
really enhances your, yeah, trusted, it enhances your experience. I think it's a gift to sports fans that, you know, I love football, soccer, and in a 2-hour match, that's an absolute blowout, right? I'm actually still engaged in, you know, the second period stoppage time because I'm wondering whether they're going to, you know, beat the spread or whether, you know, the guy that I
got kicks
for a goal. Exactly. You know,
there'll be a tackle by player X. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's a gift to fans, you know, because anytime I don't turn off my TV at halftime, you know, that's a really, really good thing. Not for sports media companies, but for me as a sports consumer. I want to watch 2 hours of football, right? I don't want to watch, like, you know, 45 minutes. It's an absolute blowout. My team's never going to recover. With Chelsea fans, so I've been experiencing a lot of that. You know, my team's never going to recover, right? And turn off the TV and walk away. Like, that's not a good outcome for anybody. And I think sports betting could help with that.
All right, so you were talking about soccer, so it's a good segue to ask you about the international plans and aspirations of ESPN. I believe it's true when I say you have more ESPN brands and entities globally in the last few years, and also with the appearance of ESPN Plus, T platform, and you now have a much more global look and strategy. How do you see, how much of an importance does it have in the overall ESPN strategy? And what is exciting to you about the potential? I wouldn't call it a blue ocean for you, but there's a lot of potential to tap into that ESPN is now, I think, putting more focus on.
Yeah, well, certainly, one, it's a relatively recent change that the international company is now consolidated under Jimmy Pitaro and the ESPN leadership. You know, that's a new thing. But I think it's something that makes tremendous sense, and particularly my role in innovation. You know, we have so many things, so many relationships going on globally. You know, they're working in different places. Like, I think India's, you know, tremendous standout. Their specific market challenges, things that actually are helpful to us, right? We don't have, they're not quite as present in this market as they are in India. So, you know, they're dealing with not one or two, but literally 100 languages, you know, and trying to deliver sport to all of these consumers. And that kind of cuts in the same way, ultimately, the personalization will, you know, more broadly. So I think there's so many interesting experiences and findings there. And bringing those a little bit closer to center, I think are only going to help everybody. You know, I mean, I think we're all in the process of discovering the best partners, discovering the best technologies, and the best, you know, on-air implementation, the best broadcast, most efficient broadcast technologies. And all of that being a little closer to home, I think, is going to have positive impact for the company. And, you know, and then I think, look, also the ability to look, I mean, sports are just inherently global now, right? And the ability to kind of look for and consider global plans around sports and sports licensing is a tremendous advantage.
Right. Awesome. I'd like, as we are close to our close, I'd like to try to pick your brain on what is exciting for you in the next 2-3 years that's coming. What do you see big changes that will happen, you know, without disclosing anything that you can't share, but in terms of innovation, what do you see the trends that you think our listeners should be on the lookout for?
We're very fortunate, you know, because we're cheek and jowl with probably the best film studio on the planet that's implemented just brilliant technologies in terms of, you know, both production tools and, you know, CGI and all this. I mean, you look at the Avatar movie and you kind of go, well, what if some of those technologies kind of crept over into the sports world, right? That'd be really interesting. So, you know, when we think about virtual sets, when we think about environments, when we think about the ability to produce live sports, you know, not in vans on site and not in control rooms in Bristol, but, you know, literally from a laptop anywhere on the planet, that's a very powerful thing. Look, when it's very fashionable now to talk about AI, but, you know, we've looked at it for a long time. I think the ability to have talent who can voice a read in 50 different markets in ways that are very specific to that market using neural voice is really interesting. I think having virtual or avatar talent is really, really cool and very interesting. And, you know, the ability to auto-generate content, you know, literally from a feed of stats is something that's also very interesting. And so kind of converge all these things and you go, wow, this is a very exciting sports media space that we're going to be living in. You know, one that gives me exactly what I want and the voices I love as a fan. But also, as I said before, you know, we got to continue to operate at the edge of people's preference space, right? Like, it can't be driven solely by what people think they want. You know, we still have this editorial responsibility to show them the things that they, you know, that they need to know, the things they should know about. Personalization is also kind of a weird thing. You know, it's a mirror and sometimes a pleasant one. When I was running Yahoo News many years ago, I called up our tech team because I was like, you know, this personalization engine, there's something wrong with it because all the headlines I'm getting are about Britney Spears. And they said, no, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, and I kind of fancied myself this very erudite news consumer. But the fact was, you know, I was just consuming too much kind of pop culture content and it ended up dominating my feed. So the point is, sometimes holding up the personalization mirror to people isn't exactly the right thing. And look, I think that's where the kind of high touch editorial comes in. There'll always be that balance.
I think there's a trap that you can fall into. You innovate in order to innovate, right? Innovate to give a better fan experience. That's a huge, huge difference. And I think you really put the right point there. All right. Aviv, anything else you want to?
No, I think that was great. And Mark, thank you for sharing some of those insights. I personally have a few follow-up conversations I want to have with you about some things that we're thinking of, things that fall right in line with maybe some of your aspirations and things we're looking into these days. So like really great to hear you say those things and really interesting, I'm sure, for all our listeners.
Absolutely. As I said, you know, the thing I love is we're all paddling in the same direction and I'm very excited about the future we can all build together.
Wow, that was interesting.
Yeah, it's so great to hear such a leader in this space. You know, Mark has been senior executive in the biggest sports entity there is. So hearing his thoughts and hearing their plans and his excitement brings excitement, I think, to myself and perhaps, hopefully, to many fans that are listening to this. So it's amazing.
ESPN is definitely a leader in the space. And most of the sports media rights of the biggest brands, the biggest content outlets is owned by ESPN. So what they do is going to definitely shape the industry. Really looking forward to see what comes next.
I think so many of the habits that we have as fans came from these guys, came from what ESPN has created, something out of nothing in many ways. You know, this has been decades long process. So we're not noticing it right now, but they've been shaping the way we consume and engage with sports. So
yeah, and SportsCenter is synonymous with sports news today. But like what we have in Israel, Hachot Sport, and sports news is the birth of that. So
carbon copy.
Yeah. So that's how we follow sport.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we'll be on the lookout to see what they're going to do. And it's so exciting to have them as partners and have our ideas be tested by them and being led by them to understand the new trends and implementing it with them. So incredibly lucky to be able to do it.
Okay. So thanks again, Shaka.
All right.
And
thank you, Aviv. Till next time. Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please rate us and leave a review or share the show with a friend. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please do now so that you never miss a new episode. We're your hosts. I'm Shaka.
And I'm Aviv. We're the Arnon Brothers. And this has been Sports Content Kings by WSC Sports. Thank you all for joining us and looking forward to seeing you here in the future.